This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. How do you stand out? As a salesperson or sales leader, how do you become irreplaceable? With a crowded, competitive workforce, an unpredictable job landscape, increasing job demands, and the rise of AI, everyone in sales either is or should be asking themselves these questions. William Vanderblumen has asked these questions over the past 15 years while running one of the world's top executive search firms. Through extensive research of over 30,000 top leaders and proprietary data, he identified the 12 habits of the best of the best. His book, Be the Unicorn, 12 Data-Driven Habits That Separate the Best Leaders from the Rest, reveals the traits that everyone in sales and sales leadership roles should strive for. William, I heard you on another podcast that I listened to, and I was really eager to reach out and have you on this show because I think so much of what you wrote about and talked about is directly relevant for sales teams. So thank you so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me, Will, and thanks for having a great first name.
So let's start by asking you about some of the 12 distinguishing unicorn habits or skills that you think are most applicable for those in sales.
I think probably these 12 habits that we discovered are directly transferable to sales. I say that because I am a sales guy. Like when I was a newspaper boy at 9 years old, there's a dog that chased me every afternoon. I hated it. And it was for one paper on a long dirt road. So I bought up the three routes around me from my buddies and redistributed everything. So I had a denser, more target-friendly environment for sales in papers, then sold off the parts I didn't want, including the dog on the dirt road. It's a congenital condition. It's chronic. I don't know. I'm afflicted with whatever the salespeople have, anxious to learn from your crowd and then share some of what we're seeing.
So let's get into some of these concepts that come from the book. There were a few that stood out to me. I don't know which ones you want to get into. The fast, authentic, solver, things like that. I'd love for you to talk about those.
I have 12 favorites of the 12. I had to talk about any of them. But my personal favorite, and I think the easiest one that you can tweak, is the fast. A little bit of background. We studied these 30,000 top interviews. We've done hundreds of thousands of interviews, but top candidates get a long form face-to-face interview with us in a search. We've done 30,000 of those, and we've said, what do these people have in common? And it was a very selfish study. We set out to do it just so we would be able to spot the top talent faster than any other search firm, and we'd be better at what we do, and people would be happier. And what we discovered, though, was I thought it would be a magic formula of traits, personality type, maybe even as simple as they're all good looking. It sounds superficial, but like they were all quarterbacks or head cheerleaders. They were all 6'5" with fabulous hair and teeth. It was none of that. It was behavioral habits that the best of the best had in common. And that's encouraging news. And it took what our selfish project was and turned it into, we need to make this a book people can read and develop. And really believe that if you'll apply these 12 habits, you will stand out in the crowd. We've discovered a kind of a eureka moment of finding the one treadmill that if you use it, will get you in the best shape of your life. No questions asked. And everyone's going to think, you look different. What are you doing different? Yeah, I bought that treadmill and I'm using it. So the book, which marketing people get mad if I don't hold it up, even though we're audio only, marketing people will know. Be the Unicorn, this is the treadmill. If you use it, you will stand out of the crowd. And the easiest one to start trying to do better is fast. You say, William, I'm not fast. What are you talking about? That's a trait you're born with, not a habit that can be learned. I'm not fast either. I'm Dutch. And that means we're not built for speed. We're built for wind resistance. I'm not quick. The better title would be the responsive. People who respond quickly and intentionally. Man, one intentional minute can make all the difference in your sales numbers for the year. And I've seen it directly linked to sales response time. And we can talk about that if that's helpful to you, but it's a massive study about response time.
Yeah, because I heard you talk about that somewhere else.
it made me more convinced that this is the single easiest fix of the 12. Some of them are lifelong journeys. Self-awareness, we can talk about later. That's a lifelong journey. This one can be turned on and off really fast. Do you get back to people with a human intentional response and a fast rate of speed? Like those two things, one intentional minute. I assume you guys, your audience knows what inbound marketing is, right? HubSpot, Infusionsoft. You set up your website so that people can fill out a form to please have someone contact me. Now you just say it out loud. Your phone hears it and your social media feed's full of whatever the thing was. It's a little difficult. But inbound marketing, so a study done of companies that are paying for software to drive inbound leads. So they've invested money in paying. One of the companies that's one of the larger inbound marketing groups said, why don't we do a study of companies that pay for this? So tens of thousands of companies were studied. And the question they were asking is, how much does response time affect the sales process? How much does it affect the sales process? I think we all intuitively know the quicker the better. But the data, which is the difference with this book versus if I'd written William's ruminations on what he thinks makes a great unicorn.
That's part of what's great about this is it's very data driven. It's not just conceptual.
So the data around sales response time, fascinating. They found, so my understanding, you please teach me, but my understanding of the point of a sales call is to get to the next sales call. It's not to close instantly. If that happens, great. But the whole 1950s and 60s of ABCs of sales, always be closing. It's not that. Always keep the conversation going is the new math that I know.
Especially in more complex B2B sales environments, of course, yeah.
They call it consultative sales instead of transactional sales. You're advising on a major, probably anxiety-driven purchase. In sales, if your goal is to try and get to the next conversation, well, what happens if you respond quickly? Study asked the question, found this. If you get a lead in your inbox from HubSpot or Infusionsoft or Pardot or whatever you're using, if you get a lead and you respond to that lead intentionally, not an auto response, not something that looks like a chatbot, if you respond intentionally within 60 seconds, you have a greater than 98% chance of having another sales conversation with that lead. Greater than 98%. If you wait 20 minutes, you still have a good chance, but it's only 60%. Hey, if I'm on the computer and I'm doing email or whatever, and I send a form to some company, I'm still doing email within a minute. If I get a response, wow, but 20 minutes from now, I might be on to the next thing. It drops even more with a little more time. If we had a long time, I could walk through all the markers. The big one was, if you wait 24 hours from the time a lead comes in to reaching to them, you statistically have a less than 1% chance of ever talking to that lead. Here's the kicker. The survey then asked all the participants, what is your average response time for a lead that comes in? 42 hours. That's where the average is. And you can say, well, I don't function that. Good. You're ahead of the norm. But if you want to stand out of the crowd, pure speed with intent. We got on this today and you're like, what is that city behind you? Where are you? Something personalized within a minute. Slam dunk. You wait a day. Might as well not even try.
This is also where the rise of things like live website chat functionality comes in, because it helps somebody jump into a conversation in the moment or even before the moment that they've contacted you because of just what you're saying.
I think there is a tremendous easy win with that software if people listening are using that, if you will have it run by a human. AI is going to change the sales world drastically. I'm convinced of it. And one of the things that's going to change is the human touch will be more valuable than ever. Credit Card Discover has a commercial out now with that lady that was in White Lotus, and oh, she's been in lots of things. She's so fun. And she picks up the phone to call Discover and she listens to it and said, wow, you AI bots are sounding more and more human every day. And they're like, no, you're talking to a real person. Wow. And finally the Discover person says, how do I know you're not a robot? And she goes, oh, I don't know. But their whole sales pitch with Discover right now is you will get an English-speaking human response if you call us. Somebody thought that through, and that's smart. It's intentional, it's fast, and it's human-driven.
In a sense, sort of sad reality is that does stand out from the crowd now.
It's the easiest time. This is the easiest trait to tweak. Just be human and be fast in your responsiveness. you will rise to the top. You will kill your numbers. Our guys go crazy when they come on our team because I'm a 60-second guy. I did that. I started our company and figured out pretty fast. I had six kids. If I don't sell anything, we don't eat. So I was maniacal about it, but my maniacal attitude has led to a team that responds like that. And their conversion rate on a form that comes through is sitting right at about 40% from if someone fills out a form to someone's writing us a check. That's a stout number. And I think responsiveness is probably the biggest contributor to that.
That's great advice. And I think you're absolutely right, both in the responsiveness from a time aspect and what you were just saying about the human response aspect and the humanity in sales that's really needed. We're not going to have time to get into all 12. There were a few that stood out. Let's talk about a couple of others. There was some of the other traits: authentic, solver, self-aware, curious, likable, productive, not busy. Let's talk about authentic in the context of sales roles and productive and not busy.
Authentic might be the one chapter other than the fast that I would tell salespeople to go read. What do you say instead of old? Seasoned, mature, been around a while, whatever. If you can practice and develop the habit of authenticity, off the charts, you'll beat every salesperson. For the sake of time, I'll give you one hack that's not in the book that will help you become more authentic, particularly as sales meetings have turned into Zoom, being on camera, a lot of budgets have gotten cut for salespeople to go in person. We've actually flipped that. We've increased our in-person sales budget to let people go out on the road because we think that human touch is the winner in all cases. But if you're on Zoom especially, here's your hack for how to be authentic. What is the number one pain point for a homeless person right now? It sounds totally unrelated, but it's not. You know what homeless people really feel hurt by more than anything else? They don't feel seen. If you live in a big city and you have homeless folks, it's the same guy on the way to work for 16 years. The guy's been working that one corner trying to get. And for the longest time, my personal opinion, smart people differ, but I don't hand out money. I'll give you food. I'll give you a bus token to the mission, whatever. And so I just wouldn't look because I wasn't going to give him money. And I didn't realize until a guy running a homeless shelter said, just look them in the eye. That's the best thing you can give them all day long. They really feel unseen. I think that's probably everybody. I don't think it's just the homeless guy. Have you ever been in a room with somebody that made you feel like you're the only person in the room? That's what you want to be as a sales. Here's the hack. Communicating that I see you, I hear you. Look them in the eye. Well, William, I always look at them. No, you don't. No, you don't. Most people look at the bridge of the nose, or they shift back and forth between eyes. And here's the reality, and maybe your people are smarter than me and already knew this, but we look through one eye and the other one just provides depth perception. We are dominant in one eye. Think about sharpshooters. They're just using one eye. Don't use both. 90% of all humans are right eye dominant. If you're in a sales conversation, it's easier with Zoom. I'm on a Riverside right now. I can look dead into that little dot of a camera. And on Zoom, a lot of times we forget to do that because we're looking down at the person that is on Zoom. We're trying to make eye contact by looking at them. No, dead into the camera. When you do get face to face with someone, look directly into their right eye. They will feel seen. They will say, this guy's actually listening to me. Yeah, I know he's a sales guy, but at least he's authentically listening and seeing and hearing me.
It's such a subtle point, but like you said, it's a minor thing that can make a monumental difference.
Minor thing that people just don't think about. You aren't taught that stuff in school, but you go, next time you're in the room with somebody who's really making you feel like you're the only person in the room, how deeply are they looking into you as they watch you? They're probably looking just at your dominant eye. Cool little hack to raise authenticity in a profession where I love salespeople. I hate being sold to. So if you come off as authentic with me, now I'm ready to talk to you.
The other one I wanted to spend a couple minutes on is the one about being productive and not busy. These are all really applicable to salespeople, but that one in particular, I think, is worth peeling back the layers on.
If you had a shot of my diplomas on the wall, you'd see not helpful things for sales: a religion, philosophy, and a seminary degree. Not super helpful for building a business, but what I'm learning in the sales world is people who actually do things, it doesn't matter what their training is, if they actually get stuff done, then they're in rare air. If they take care of it right away, if they act as soon as they can, it ties back to responsiveness. But it means responding with intent. It means acting with intent. It doesn't mean being busy all day long. I would bet your best salespeople don't work as many hours in a week as your worst salespeople. They just work with intention. They work toward a goal. They're always thinking about how to move the needle with their best clients. It's the doers, the people who actually get stuff done. And once you find somebody who does that, if we had time, I'd play a clip from a fabulous talk from President Obama. It's going around YouTube. You can YouTube search President Obama do it and you'll find it. It's about a 2-minute clip. And he said, there's just in my presidency, I ran into lots of people who could tell me the problems. They could tell me what couldn't be done. They could tell me how unwinnable something was. The person I wanted to find and I would always hire and I would never fire was the one who'd say, I got this. And they're not being busybodies. They're being intentional. So it's Girl Scout cookie season. And I love they still get to go around door-to-door selling. We can't be newspaper boys or newspaper women or girls or whatever anymore. Girl Scouts come to my door and same little one, Charlotte, has come 3 years in a row. First year, she was as young as you can be in the Girl Scouts, whatever that is. It looked like 5 or 6 years. Our neighborhood's really tight and we support one another. And there are a lot of people that have done well in their world. And little Charlotte comes to the door, 5 years old. Her dad, great dad, stood way back on the sidewalk, wouldn't walk up there with her. And she said, hello, Mr. Van Buren. She figured out my name. Would you like to buy some Girl Scout cookies? And puts the order form in front of me. And I said, Charlotte, there's a store called Milk and Cookies 300 yards from here. It's the best chocolate chip cookie I've ever had in my life. Why in the world should I buy Girl Scout cookies from you instead of just walking down there and getting the best cookie in the world? Oh, she's eyes get big and tremble a little bit. And I'm looking back at the dad and he's just dying laughing. So she gives me a couple of reasons. She comes back the next year. Would you like to buy again? Charlotte. And she went right into her pitch and she had it the next year. She's telling me about the cause of the Girl Scouts and how it helps the world. I just met my new EVP of sales. It's going to be 20 years before I can hire her. And it's because she keeps upping her game. She keeps doing something more. Most people don't do more. They do the least amount of work possible. I woke up on Christmas morning this year, which is not Girl Scout cookie time. It's February is when they sell. On my doorstep on Christmas morning were 3 boxes of Girl Scout cookies and a thank you note to my loyal customer from Charlotte and a call to action at the bottom of the note saying, I remembered you liked these 3 flavors. They're going to sell out. Why don't you pre-order with me today?
And using your example of this young girl selling Girl Scout cookies, she also seems really good at tying what she's doing to the broader organization's mission and purpose, which is a big factor.
That's been her best pitch. It's just the last habit we name in the book is called the purpose driven. So what we found studying these unicorns is they're all driven by a North Star. And it might be, I want to make more money. I don't want to live in poverty anymore. I'm not living like I was raised. It might be, that's fine. They've got something higher than, what do I have to get done today? If you think about the people who've gotten more done than anyone in the world, they all have a North Star. Even in bad cases, like Hitler had his own directional star. I wouldn't call it North. He was arguably the worst person ever, but he had something driving him besides what's in front of me today. And what we discovered is the higher the North Star is, the more those unicorns get done. And I think this is especially important in sales. The more you can find a salesperson who will drive toward a higher cause. I spoke in front of a big, huge conference the automotive industry puts on for innovation. It's like a Shark Tank kind of thing for innovation in the auto industry. And it was in Detroit. And I asked a very unpopular question. I said, so why is it that in a very short time, some California automaker has become the most valuable auto company in the world, Tesla? Room got real quiet. You guys are probably familiar with, you can be fast, cheap, or good. One of those three, maybe two, but not all three. So what is Tesla? Is it fast? No, there's a wait list. Is it cheap? No. Never has been. Is it a good automobile? I think the jury's out on that. Why have they won? If you buy a Tesla, you can save the world. If you buy a Tesla, you're doing something good. And who are their best buyers? Millennials. 75% of all millennials want to know why a company exists before they'll take a job at that company. It's the Simon Sinek Start With Why. So in your sales, if you want to stand out, if you want good mental selling, think of the highest North Star you can for what you're selling. Speak about that way more than the product. Way more than the product. Talk about the mission, the vision of what you're selling, and the product will take care of itself.
And a lot of these traits, and this is a good example, they're all interconnected, because if you're purpose-driven, you're going to be faster, which we talked about earlier. You're going to be more curious, which is another one. You'd be more willing to get out of your comfort zone, all those sorts of things.
They are interconnected. Within the unicorns, we had them force rank what they think they're good at and what they're not. There's some that are more popular than others, but they are incredibly intertwined, which makes for a nice flywheel. If you can work on being intentionally fast, the easiest one to adopt, momentum is a great person's best friend. If you're an achiever as a salesperson, you know it. When do you sell the most? Right after you sold the most. It's just the way it goes. If you work on one of these habits, the next one's going to come easier than the next one. We've even built a little software tool for you to be able to see what are my three best, what are my three worst against the unicorns of the world. If you go to vanderindex.com, you'll find your way around it. It's like a personality profile test, and we designed it with psychologists and that sort of thing. So it might be helpful to give you a way to say, how do I get started?
When it comes to all of these traits, they can be learned / trained by organizations. But why do you think organizations don't train and develop for these things enough?
I read a figure recently, it was like last year. I'm going to have the number off a little bit, so somebody's going to Google and say he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's something ridiculous. $1 billion was spent in our business world, the U.S. business world, on leadership development. And that number just keeps going up every year, and yet the leaders aren't developing. You would think we'd be the best on the planet at everything for all the money we're pouring in. I think the difference is we're buying a lot of treadmills and very few people are getting on them. If you've ever had a treadmill that you've hung wet laundry on, you're with me because I've done it. Very few people actually take the initiative. That's not a discouraging word about humanity. It's a word of opportunity to anybody listening today. If you just do these things, you will stand out, because most people won't.
Using that treadmill analogy is good, because it's in part about the organization bringing the treadmill into the room, but that person has to step on it. And to go further, using a treadmill, you don't get better by getting on it once. You've got to get on it time and time again. So that's part of where the organization and the individuals being trained meet in the middle.
If you want to play the metaphor out a little farther, you're really not going to become a great runner unless you get on it over and over with a plan and a strategy. Hopefully, this is another tool. There are a lot of good ones out there, but this is another tool that's easily understood. I did not write it to win the Nobel Prize. You're going to read this and say anybody could have come up with the data is what came up with this. We try to make it simple and understandable so anybody can take what they're learning and build a plan to stand out in the crowd. And my goodness, with the workforce as crowded as it is, with our attentions being distracted by a number of new technologies, and with AI coming, it's time to start saying, I need to build a plan so I'll stand out.
I'd love, again, to be able to get into all of these 12 habits, because, again, I think they're all so highly applicable for salespeople, curious, likable, adaptability, and flexibility. But a question I want to make sure we get to is, if they read this book, should they try to focus on spreading across all of these habits? Or is the better strategy trying to focus and lean into, say, two or three that resonate most with them, or that maybe they're best at?
I think momentum is your friend. And I've got a friend, I don't know if you've heard of Dave Ramsey, he's on the radio, like, get out of debt, get your budget in order. Dave always says, most people have multiple credit cards. What's the first step to getting out of debt? Pay the smallest one off first. You'll feel the achievement. You'll feel the release. And then you can attack the bigger one. So find the one that's easiest for you to take up and try, not the hardest one. Once the momentum kicks in, it'll work itself out. And so how do I know where to start? You can take the vanderindex.com and it'll show you your top three, and it'll measure it against the general population and against the unicorns and show where you are and your bottom three. Some people like to work on the bottom three first, fine, whatever. I may first start with your strengths guy. I like the momentum of achieving once. And the cool thing with the book is it's not sequentially dependent. You don't have to read it in order. You can say, I'm going to read about this one first, and then this one, and then this one. So I would start by figuring out what your top gifts are. You can go to Vander Index and do that and read the book in that order.
In the context of the sales hiring process or the job search process, if you're a salesperson, what are some other qualities that companies should look for in their next sales hire? Of course, salespeople should keep in mind when they're applying for jobs.
I can tell you it's worked for us. And we're consultative sales. We're not transactional. People are very nervous when they call. I've never called an agency like yours or from you sound like I felt the first day I went to counseling. When they say, why are we here today? Very limited sample size. But my experience is the speed, fast, quick responsiveness. Yes, it can be learned, but really great salespeople, for whatever reason, are almost obsessed with it. So I interview for that. I'd rather not have to train that if it's the most valuable thing in a salesperson. I'd rather know it's there. And here's how I do that. Will all of a sudden decides it's too cold in Boston. I don't want to be here anymore. The Astros are better than the Red Sox. I'm moving to Houston. I want to work with William. And so we have our chat and we do a Zoom interview. We're like, we'd like to fly you down for a day, meet everybody. And I've gotten skewered for doing this. If you Google my name and text test, you'll see people just do not like me for this, but it works for me. So Will comes down, he spends the day with us, and then he gets home. We fly you in and out same day. So you're getting back, you're landing at Logan, you're walking to your car, it's late 30, and you get a text from a number you don't. Hey, Will, it's Jennifer here at Vanderblumen. I heard you were in the office today. I had to be out with a client. Heard it was an amazing visit. I'd love to touch base with you sometime. Let me know what works for you. If you respond to Jennifer in less than 24 hours, you're already better than, well, less than 42 hours. You're already better than average. If you respond to her within 20 minutes, that's pretty amazing. And if you respond within a minute, and you're not going to lose the job because of this, but it is a test. If you respond within a minute, even if it's just to say, just getting home from Logan, love to touch base tomorrow and find a time. That's simple. You have moved into the express lane of hiring for our company. We're going to look at other things. Probably some of my manic responsiveness is rooted in some dysfunction in my psyche. I don't care. I don't want you to take it away. I'm testing for that because if I can find somebody who is naturally bent towards super fast and intentional responsiveness, I'm going to give them a better look at people who are not.
Building on this, the idea around the hiring or job search process, I also wanted you to talk about something I heard you say on the other podcast, and this was about why you say hiring mistakes can cost you more than you think.
The quickest way to say this is people are like, I don't want to hire a search firm. It's a lot of money. I just say the most expensive way to hire somebody is to hire the wrong person. Because when you do, you then have to replace them. Depending on what state you live in, that can take a while if you're not an at-will employer state. Never mind the headache that it creates. And nearly everyone can make three friends at an office. So now you got three people that are mad that person got fired. You've lost momentum. You've lost time, the time that it takes to train somebody to be ready to work. We're sitting here saying when we hire people, it used to take 6 months for them to really be able to pay for themselves. We've moved it down to 3 months. We're trying to get it to 30 days because we're trying to speed up the return on investment of a person. But if we invest in a person, we have to fire them and start over and then wait another 6 months for the next person to be ready. The costs are astronomical. I'm sure some of the people listening today have a similar thing. If you're trying to sell people on something, let them discover their own pain point. Don't point it out to them. So we build, I think you can probably find it. It wouldn't apply to you, but it might give you an idea for your work. Google Vanderblumen bad hire calculator. And we built answer these five questions. And we'll show you that $50,000 a year employee costs $75,000 to replace. People don't see those costs. They don't feel them because they're soft costs, but they're very real.
And it goes to not just the hiring mistake, quote unquote, hiring the wrong person, but the importance of retention and continuing to foster the development of your people so you don't lose the good ones on top of having to get rid of the bad ones.
That's a whole nother podcast I'd love to talk about, but I think retention is going to be the new gold standard among companies. And that's particularly true with salespeople because good salespeople are hard to find, and I'll go steal them and hire them away from anywhere, and salespeople are looking for the next opportunity. So retention's a whole nother podcast.
You've said that the most consistent indicator of likability is deflecting the conversation away from yourself.
Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about you. How important is that in sales? If you're talking about yourself, you're not selling. If you're talking about your product, you're not selling. I don't have a degree in sales, but my understanding is great salespeople are great listeners. They do active listening and they're probing. Before I started this company, I led an organization. I was around a lot of really accomplished people. I mean, like world beaters, best in the world, what they do. I found that to factor out the narcissistic jerks, there's those people are around, like they're going to be around at the end of time. But in general, the most successful people I met, I couldn't get them to talk about themselves. I've actively tried, even like with sitting presidents. Tell me about you. What else does a politician want to talk about? No, not the best ones. They're constantly deflecting the conversation back to me. They're constantly turning it into, tell me about you. And we found that to be true with unicorns, but it's tied directly, not just to making the sale, but I really like that guy. I've had it happen with very well-known elected official that I never, ever voted for. I ended up spending 2 or 3 hours alone with him. And I'm like, I'm not going to vote for him, but I like him now. I understand why he got elected. And most of it was because he spent the bulk of the conversation asking me about me.
Are there any behaviors to be conscious of if you're in sales that will get you fired? You talked about a few somewhere else that I wanted you to articulate here because I think it's really an important point for people listening.
And we asked the unicorns to force rank the 12 habits. What do you think you're best at? What do you think you're worst at? Dead last, by a large margin, was self-awareness. The unicorns said of themselves, I really got to work on self-awareness. When the reality is they're better than nearly everybody at it. Now, turn that around, and I'm getting to salespeople. Very great question. We asked the general population, how would you rank yourself in each of these 12 habits? Like really bad, bad, average, good, really good. When it came to self-awareness, 91% of the general population said that they're above average in self-awareness. I don't have a math degree, but I'm pretty sure only 50% of a group is above average. And the other 50% is below average. 91%. So what does that mean? Self-awareness is so stinking rare. Particularly younger me. I've got so much to learn, but particularly when I was like 31 and I knew everything. I completely lacked self-awareness, which leads to talking about myself, which leads to talking about the product and not the potential client, which leads to trying to sell it right now rather than continue a conversation. I think that in some ways, salespeople are most vulnerable to having an Achilles heel when it comes to self-awareness. Because salespeople are confident enough to talk, confident enough to try and convince, confident enough to try and close, and the shadow side of all that confidence is narcissism. I would say for salespeople in particular, I'd work on self-awareness. It's pretty interesting. I'm a person of faith, and I'm not trying to push that on anybody. But it's interesting to me, Paul, who wrote 2/3 of the New Testament, like his earliest letters to all these churches, first one he wrote by most scholars' standard, is Galatians. And he starts the letter. He says, this is Paul. I'm an apostle appointed by God, not by man. Okay, this guy didn't have any self-confidence issues. He'd probably be good at sales. You read the last letter he wrote, and how does he describe himself? He says, I am the chief of all sinners. It's like the longer he walked a road of maturing, the more he realized how little self-awareness he had. And that's the unicorns say, oh, I got to work on this, when in reality, they're better at it than anybody else. So I would say if you're grading yourself as good at self-awareness, it might be worth taking another look. It might be worth taking a 360 personality profile. You can do that through ours or a number of other ones where you'll see your blind spots. Let someone else tell you what you're good at.
And there was a piece you also talked about that on behaviors to avoid or that can get you in trouble. There was something around something simple as just not arriving for meetings on time or ending them on time, wasn't there?
Another thing I get skewered for, I think being late for meetings shows me I can't trust you. It becomes an integrity issue. And I know this because I was the worst at it, and I'm still not perfect. But I remember arriving to a meeting late, and the worst is I have done it before so I can laugh. But when the person shows up late for the meeting with a piping hot Starbucks in their hand.
You had time to stop for Starbucks on your way in, but you're arriving 11 minutes after.
So this guy who's mentoring me says, William, you know what? This has become an integrity issue for me. I question your integrity. That's a robust statement. Why? Did we agree we were meeting at 9? Yeah. Okay, that's a contract. And you consistently break our contract. And you've broken it enough times now that I'm not going to believe you when you say you'll do anything. One time. And man, he was an in-your-face guy, and that's a severe example, but it's true. It, particularly with job interviews, your first deliverable with the company you want to work for is showing up to that interview on time. And by the way, that does not mean showing up early, because that creates problems too. You can show up to the parking lot early, so you make sure you walk in on time. If you show up early, some admin or somebody's got to stop what they're doing and get you a coffee while you're waiting, and you have interrupted the workflow of the place. Be on time, and people will trust you quicker.
Again, the flip side to that is arriving to meetings on time is ending them on time, which I think shows respect or empathy, whatever you want to call it, for the other person as well. If you set a meeting for an hour, you can't run an hour in 20 minutes. You've got to be respectful, whether it's an internal meeting or with customers. Showing that respect for them is important.
It shows your awareness of boundaries. I am not as good at it. The best lesson I've seen, I was a freshman at Wake Forest. I was taking a class on J.R. Tolkien, and it was a super interesting class for a compulsory requirement for the degree. So fine, I'll do it. But it was 8 a.m. Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And that's tough freshman fall. I remember the professor said, we start at 8. I close this door at 8, and it's locked. And sure enough, first few weeks, you'd hear the door jiggle a little. People try and the door, and it's locked. And then he said, and then at 8:50, I expect you to walk out of here. Even if I'm in the middle of a sentence, walk out. Class is over at 8:50. And I thought, that's fair. I can live with that. Backside's just as important as the front.
Lastly, I wanted to just talk a bit about the importance of trust in building sales cultures and its characteristics. I think you've got some good things to say around what it takes to create cultures of trust.
That's pretty simple. And I've probably said it different ways in different podcasts, but we have 7 kids. They're all so different. I've become the family HR office. Like, they come to me with, what should I do for a living? What should I, career questions kind of thing. I've gotten to one answer for them. Look, I don't care what your business you're going into. And for your listeners today, I don't care what you're selling. I promise you, if you do these things, you will be the best in the industry. Oh, Dad, what's that? Do what you said you were going to do, when you said you were going to do it, at the price you promised you would do it. You do those 3 things, you will be in the top 5% of any industry on the planet. And I've said that in front of some really successful people before, and they've all said, I don't think it's 5%, I think it's 1%. There's nobody. Have you ever built a house? Do what you say you're going to do, when you say you're going to do it, at the cost you said you're going to do it. Like, you find me a builder that actually does that, I'll hire him.
No, you're right. It probably is closer to 1% than the 5. But again, if it's one of those things, if you really want to stand out from the crowd, just those, they sound simple. They're not simple probably to deliver on, but they're so.
I don't want to pester you, Will, but in our last call, you said 2 weeks was probably a time to check in. So I had it on my calendar to reach out today and see how you're doing. Is there any update?
And that relates back to some extent. It ties into the fast trait that we talked about at the beginning of this.
They're all intertwined. And fortunately, it is data driven. Like, I want to be able to spot Charlotte, the Girl Scout cookie salesperson, before you do, because I want to hire her. So I studied these people to try and find out how to spot them and figured out, actually, this is a roadmap. You can be one of those people. I hope that it's a resource that helps the salespeople out there. I got a soft spot for you ladies and men that are spending your life doing that. I think it's one of the hardest and most rewarding jobs there is.
It absolutely is. That's why this show exists. And you're going to have to keep an eye on Charlotte and see how she turns out. I think she's got a really interesting future.
Yeah, just in case anyone's wondering, there's no way I'm giving you her real name.
William, thank you so much for being here. This has been really good, really a lot of great substance and insights. And I think there's a lot that people could take from reading your book.
Thanks. Appreciate it very much.
For our listeners, thank you, of course, as always, for listening, being with us wherever you are and whenever you might be hearing this. You can find William's book, Be the Unicorn, 12 Data-Driven Habits That Separate the Best Leaders from the Rest, as well as his book, Culture Wins, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever you get your books. Find and follow William Vanderblumen on LinkedIn. Just start typing in William Vander and his name will come up, I promise, when you're looking for him. Your website is vanderblumen.com, correct?
That's right. And in Google, however you want, it'll show up.
So thanks again, everybody, for joining us. Please, of course, tell others about the show. Leave us a rating or a comment or a review. It always helps us to make improvements as we go. And of course, scroll back and listen to any previous episodes that you might have missed. So until next time, thanks everyone for being with us today, and I hope you really enjoyed this episode.
Thank you for listening, and I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed, and as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.